Hello, I'm Anna.
And I'm Bethany, and we're trying to review every Jane Austen adaptation ever.
Welcome to Austen Translation, the only Jane Austen podcast that covers the characters' star signs
that we know of. We're two best friends who've known each other since school. I've persuaded Anna to join me on this Jane Austen journey.
I'm less of an Austen expert, but I'm no less ready to share my hot takes on these adaptations.
This week, we watched Lost in Austen, an ITV miniseries from 2008.
It was batshit. It was... I can't even describe... Like, the more I keep thinking about it, because while it's happening, everything's happening so fast that you're quite grasping the fact of what they have done. And then I've been thinking about it ever since I finished it yesterday, and I'm like, oh my god, the plot holes, the complete U-turns, the just, I don't even.
I have watched this before, but I watched it when it came out, so it's been over 10 years.
Oh my god.
Since
you got it fresh in 2008.
Yeah, and I just, at the time, so how old would I have been?
Fresh from the oven.
15 years old, maybe, maximum.
Do you think it's aged well?
Do you know what? At the time, I thought it was great.
I know. When you said, oh, this is really great, I was like, are you sure, though?
And then,
is that the word you're going to use for that?
I think, I now vaguely remember, I think I've attempted to watch it since then, and I got to the second episode and got angry and stuff.
that's about right.
Because I was like, there's a reason why it's been 10 years since
Oh, God.
Yeah, it was nuts. It was nuts. From start to finish. So, obviously, it starts out in, I say present day.
Can I just say, it's like someone gave them, they were like, right, we've got enough budget for 4 episodes. We need to cram as much shit as we possibly just a bunch of like Jane Austen fan fiction writers just got together, and they all were fighting over what they wanted to happen, so they were like, well, we're just going to put it all in, it'll all just go in.
It's so good but also bad. It's that like
it's just chaotic. The chaos is like you just get swept up in it, and you're just like, yeah, I'm just going to accept that this is happening. And then afterwards, you're like, what just happened to me?
That's the thing. Okay, what I'm like, you kind of have to go big or go home, and they went big.
They did go big. They did. They did do that.
If they hadn't just gone all in on it, I'm not saying it's a masterpiece or anything, but like it was the kind of. It's like that thing where something's horrible is happening and you can't stop watching because you have to find out what happened.
The scientists spent so long thinking about whether we could. What they should have been thinking about is, should we? That's not the line, but you know what I mean.
No, we should. How did you lose it?
Like, I don't know, because I was like, it's not going to work. It's not going to sound right if I say should, whether we should. But no. That's
it could have worked.
Maybe I should just say the line again.
You could have gone, they thought so much about whether they could, they never stopped to think about whether they should.
Yeah.
It worked perfectly fine.
I take accountability for that.
That was so upsetting. Like a sneeze that doesn't come to fruition.
Oh, God. This is the, like, we've really channeling the energy of this show.
Yes. So it starts in, it says modern day Hammersmith. It's in 2008 Hammersmith, which is modern day, but oh god, it's very 2008.
Oh my god. Yeah.
I've forgotten, like, I don't think of it as that long ago. I was talking to my grandma about this last night, and I was like, I don't think of 2008 as that long ago. She was like, was it awful? I was like, yes.
It was bad, yeah. And also, if you think about other things that have been made in that sort of time period, what was the one in 2000? Well, there's Emma in 2009, that's 1 year afterwards. So just think about the fact that in our modern day, well, in the contemporary day that was being made, Emma 2009, people were wearing juicy tracksuits. as like a well, actually, I don't know. Maybe it was a little bit past that. To be fair, I think
that's no. I think we were because what she's wearing is like this purple.
Oh yeah, there was this thing actually, which was very like Regency inspired. I feel maybe this was around the time that all of the Regency adaptations were coming out, because I remember everyone was wearing these t-shirt material short dresses with Empire line, so everything would come out from the Empire line like a Regency dress, but they were made in shitty t-shirt material.
I had a top like that.
Yeah, I vividly remember a green, like a bright green dress that I had that I was obsessed with.
I had like a purple top like hers.
So if you just think about the fact when people were making Emma in 2009, they were wearing that stuff.
Even her hair, so she's got like a full fringe, feathered shoulder length,
and it's dyed red. I actually had hair like that color in 2008.
Call it Hayley Williams red.
Yeah, I guess so. It's like not bleached first, I don't think. She's just dyed over her natural hair colour in this bright red colour. It was a big thing back then. I also had a big sweepy fringe.
Yeah, she's got a boxy full fringe and then the feathered ends, and she's wearing lip gloss.
She's got like a leather jacket.
But we're kind of presented to her in 2008 London. She's an Austen fan, isn't she? Well, a Pride and Prejudice fan in particular.
Yeah, she just like introduces herself as this massive Austen fan. She's like, I just want to sit and read my Pride and Prejudice book on my own. I'm having a night in. And then her like boyfriend drunkenly proposes to her and she's like, oh, fuck off. Like, this is so not Darcy.
Also, she lives with this woman.
Called Piranha for some reason.
Yeah, Piranha. I was like...
Yeah, Piranha's just...
Strange, but...
What's her story?
So yeah, her friend's gone out for the night. She wants to have a night in with Pride and Prejudice. And then, like you say, her boyfriend kind of drunkenly comes in and poses. And she kind of goes to the bathroom to collect herself.
Mm.
And then... Elizabeth Bennet appears.
Can I just say, she is a job centre worker in London. And it was just like this weird thing where it's just like just loads of like working class people talking to her at the job centre. And I was like, this just doesn't feel great. Like, it was basically just like her job's so shit.
Well, yeah, I can't imagine it's very thankful job because the system works against you.
No, but it was just basically like a collection of like tradition, like what you would stereotypically imagine people going to the job centre look like.
Yeah, yeah, and she's just like tired and upset about it. And
yeah, I mean, like, I'm sure she was, as if she's a real person. But no, I was just like, okay, this is clearly from 2008. She also, I only saw it for like a second, but I think she has a pop art print of her own face just over and over again in her apartment. When she's hanging out reading her Pride and Prejudice book, she's like reading out loud to herself. Like, does anyone else do that?
That is weird. Also, in terms of the pop art thing, I had one of them.
Of your face?
Yeah. You could get them done in like fairgrounds. Not fairgrounds.
Would you have it on your wall though?
Yeah, I had it on my wardrobe. I think it's probably still there.
Well, but also you're a child.
Yeah, I was a teenager, I suppose. But
she is a fully grown woman.
Yeah, I didn't have it big. It was like A4, but I just
suddenly... No, she had like a full, like, large canvas pop-up print of her face. As far as I know, maybe I imagined it.
I know, like, that. I think it could totally be a thing.
Yeah.
So she goes to the bathroom to collect herself, and Elizabeth Bennet appears in her bathroom in her nightgown.
And she's just like, hey! Hey, girl, hey! There's a door. Miss Spencer. She keeps calling her Miss Spencer. And she's like, I found a door. It comes from my house and it's in your house. And now I'm here. And Amanda's like, why do you keep calling me Miss Spencer? And she's like, it's in all of your clothes. All of your clothes say Spencer. So clearly it's because she's got Marks and Spencer clothes.
Oh, do you know what? I didn't get that at all.
Keep up, Bethany.
It would have made more sense if she called her Miss Perkins and they were all Dorothy Perkins.
That would have been better, but, you know.
You know, that would have made more sense.
Elizabeth Bennet, by the way, is played by Gemma Arterton.
Her talents are wasted in this. You don't actually see a lot.
Yeah, you really don't see her very much. But yeah, she's just loving being in this bathroom for now. She goes back.
And Amanda Price, that's the name of, I don't know if we've said that already. Amanda Price is the name of woman in present day. She's like losing it. She just thinks she's losing it, basically.
Yeah, she'd just gotten proposed to and she was like, I'm just having a mental breakdown. So she she then goes to her mum and she's saying that she had her boyfriend had proposed, but she didn't want to marry him because she didn't think that he actually liked her that much. She's just like, just wanted to do it for the sake of it. And her mum's like, well, you know, you should do it. He's fine. And like, you've got, you know, him basically just being like, you know, you can't afford to be picky just because he's not Mr. Darcy levels of romantic. He clearly wants to be with you. So why are you not accepting her?
Yeah. Also, her mum is chain smoking throughout the entirety of this exchange. I think she's also drinking a glass of wine and she's doing that like, just marry him.
Yeah,
just marry him. You don't want to be. I think she was something like, won't keep you warm at night.
Prince, yeah.
Standards won't keep you warm at night. She's just like.
Basically, what Mrs. Price says to Fanny.
Yeah. Yeah.
I married for love, how it turned out.
Yeah. Principles and standards don't keep you warm at night. So she then leaves her mum's. Elizabeth appears in her bathroom again.
Yeah, and she says, you're not real, I'm having a hallucination. And then Elizabeth goes, I have my fleshly envelope and you have yours. And she like pinches her. And I'm like, did you have to say the words fleshly envelope there? Was that necessary?
Fleshly envelope.
Horrible.
Do you know, like skin sack?
Yeah, like that, but like almost worse somehow.
Husk.
Shut up.
So
she shows her the door. She's like, look, here's the door. And she pushes Amanda through the door and then she shuts it behind her. And she just is like, she doesn't come through.
Because this time Elizabeth is dressed in day clothes rather than a nightgown.
A nightie, yeah.
So it's like she's here to stay. And yeah, she just pushes her in and shuts the door behind her.
It's like, bye.
She walks through this corridor and she finds that she's in Longbourn, right at the beginning of the novel.
And then she bumps into Hugh Bonneville as Mr. Bennett.
I think he's a great Mr. Bennett.
He is. He's good, yeah.
He's one of my favourite characters in this. Absolutely wacky.
Yeah, he actually, I mean, he has acting chops.
Yeah, he does. Hugh Bonneville, he's a good actor. Not said enough.
Yeah, Hugh Bonneville has slept on.
What? Every time I think of Hugh Bonneville, I think about, okay, so there was a year when Downton Abbey were going to win the audience award at the BAFTAs. I can't remember what it's called, but you know the one that people vote for. People's Choice, I suppose.
Yeah.
Downton Abbey was up for it, along with Made in Chelsea and some other things. Not Made in Chelsea, Only Ways Essex. And Only Ways Essex won. And then the camera just shoots to Hugh Bonneville's face. And he's just like, what the fuck? And then the Only Ways Essex people are obviously like, woo! On the tables and everything. You can just see these, like, classically trained Downton Abbey actors and like Maggie Smith, like what?
Fucking hell.
And I just think about that every time I see Hugh Bonneville. His
That's a reaction image, isn't it?
Like, just like, what? Like, how many years of acting
have I done? I was Mr. Rushworth in Mansfield Park for this. To get where I am today, I had to play Mr. Rushworth.
And it was probably around this time when this was coming out. Maybe he had a crisis of confidence. But
he introduced himself as Claude. Like, he says his full name. And turns out his first name is Claude. And you're just like, Claude?
Yeah.
I think she actually says that. She's like, oh my God, Claude.
She's like, you gotta be kidding me. That is hilarious. Because I've forgotten it already. Don't they say Mr. Collins' first name? And I've forgotten it.
Yeah, I think I'll have it down, yeah. I've got it.
Perfect.
Don't worry about it. I've made the notes, so you don't have to.
So, yeah, she finds that she's right at the beginning of the novel, and the way she kind of explains it is she says that Elizabeth is going to stay at her house in Hammersmith.
Yeah, because she mentions to Elizabeth about the whole Mr. Darcy sitch, and she's like, who is Mr. Darcy? And she's like, you don't know yet. You haven't been through it. So that's how she sort of like establishes what...
They're like, have you heard about who's let Netherfield? Which is literally the very beginning, isn't it? So yeah, which I have to say, as an Austin fan, if I found myself in this weird alternative universe right at the beginning of the novel, I would be freaking out, but in a fun way. And I also don't think I'd fuck it up in the way that she does.
She just has no self-control. Like, she has no... She just doesn't think about the consequences of her actions whatsoever. She's not like, I'm in a time travel situation right now. A fictional time travel situation, but still time travel. You've seen, like, you must have seen enough time travel movies to be like, if I fuck this up, there will be dire consequences.
Also, she literally mentions it at one point where she talks about that those people that found the, I don't know if this is true, but they found the Stone Age tribe and gave them the common cold.
She just doesn't give a shit.
She just continues. So she's in modern day clothes, which is like the Purple Empire t-shirt, jeans, leather jacket.
Like studded belt.
Oh yeah, she's got like knee boots.
And that's it. First she's like, oh, I'm just going to go to bed. Like, I can't deal with this right now. Mr. Bennett's like, yeah, just go stay in Lizzie's room. When she goes to Lizzie's room, Kitty and Mary come to introduce themselves.
She's not saying things to them that they're not going to understand.
Like, obviously. And then she gets her phone out in front of them. And then she's like, oh, I've got no phone signal. It's like, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, she's also, she says a lot of like very British London swear words and phrases.
Yeah.
Where she's like, balls that up and things like that.
Like, just, do you just have no, like, there's like a social radar that many people have where they actually like adjust their behaviour around different groups of people to what is more socially acceptable and will make people more comfortable. She clearly does not have this radar.
She really doesn't. And, so then she gets up, I think, does she have dinner first, or like then Mr. Bingley arrives?
Oh yeah, you see Mrs. Bennett, who she played, I think, the Doctor's, like, mm-hmm. Yeah, she was in Doctor Who, she was the one with the River Song or something.
Alex Kingston.
Yeah.
I've looked her up because I really recognised her, and I don't recognise anything she's been into, but I think it must have been Doctor Who that I kind of recognised, because she was quite famous.
Yeah, River Song, I think it was her character's name.
Oh my god, she's married to Ralph Fiennes.
Yeah,
Ralph Fiennes, Ralph.
They're all married to each other, I swear to god. Anyway.
So, Mrs. Bennett is not best pleased to be seeing Amanda, but Mr. Bennett is like, a friend of Lizzie's is a friend of ours.
Well, I think he's just refreshed because he's like, oh, I'm just glad that you're just not talking nonsense all the time. I'm like, well, I beg to differ, Mr. Bennett. It's just a different kind of nonsense. Yeah. But, and then she sits down to dinner with them. I think Mary's like, what are those clothes that you're wearing? Like, I haven't seen them. Are they the fashion in town or something? And she's like, oh, it's otter hunting clothing.
Oh, I know. What an odd thing to say.
What the like, is that the first thing? And then they're like, oh, I don't think I've ever heard of people hunting otters. And she's like, well, I'm from Hammersmith, and in Hammersmith we hunt otters all the time.
Also, Hammersmith isn't in London at this point, and Mr. Bennett is like,
He's just like, I'm just gonna choose not to inquire any further about this.
Yeah, so she's basically, she's trying to bullshit her way through, and she's doing it terribly.
She's just being...
Because she's literally gone for a nap already at this point. Like, would you not have asked to get changed? Why are you sticking with the jeans and leather jacket combo?
True. I mean, I guess in her situation, we don't know what we would do, because it would never happen, because it's batshit crazy. But
think about these things. What would you do?
And to be honest, I think that I'm like cool enough in a crisis that I would be able to pull it off. Probably, I would probably end up just living in Regency era.
Because what you do as well.
I am a terrible liar, though.
That's the thing. Okay. You just keep quiet until you figure out what the fuck is going on.
Yes.
As little as possible.
You just stay under the radar. Stop talking about otters.
And stop saying things like, Claude, no wonder you keep it a secret. Like, randomly.
Just, yeah, no, because she just constantly, like, instead of saying things in her mind about, like, referencing the fact that she knows these characters and that they're from a book, she just says them out loud to the characters. Like, what is wrong with a bit of internal monologue?
That's the thing, because sometimes it does do her internal monologue, and then it just ends with her saying the last thing out loud.
Yeah, and you're like, please. So first she goes to bed, and then she wakes up in the morning, and there's someone in the bed with her, and it's Lydia. And she's like, oh, yes, I always end up sleeping in Lizzie's bed. She strokes my back when I can't sleep or something. And then she, like, I think Amanda's like, what is this? Like, are we on TV? Like, what do you want? Is this, you wanted some girl-on-girl action here? Do you want me to show you my pubes? And then she does show Lydia her pubes. And she, and Lydia's like, what have you done? And she's like, that's called a landing strip, Lydia.
Yeah, she literally just flashes her vagina.
Like, just no prompting. She just immediately was like, this is what's going to happen.
Yeah, it that bit, I'd forgotten about that bit. That bit was weird.
So much unnecessary also, shit.
Because then when she goes down to breakfast, Lydia is whispering about her vagina to Kitty.
I mean, wouldn't you? Would you not?
Like, what has she done to you? Also, what have you done to yourself?
Yeah.
Just like, ah! So now
Mr. Bingley arrives.
Mr. Bingley arrives to return a book that Mr. Bennett has lent him. And when they all curtsy, when Amanda curtsies, she ends up showing a lot of cleavage.
She doesn't have very much cleavage, to be honest. Like, when it was zooming in on her boobs, I was kind of like, is this supposed to be... like, not like, oh, your tits are so small, but like, I feel like a lot of like Regency dresses, people were having quite a lot of boob on show anyway.
That's so what I thought, but it did that thing where, like, you know,
like, boing, like, you know, Bingley's eyes popping out of his head.
Yeah, he's, he's just like, oh no, I've shown him my tits. And now he's in love with me. And I'm like, this is what Bingley.
This is literally, I mean, maybe that's the title. Oh no, I've showed him my tits and now he's in love with me.
That's literally what happens though, isn't it? Where she's like,
this is, she doesn't have to try at all to get all of these characters to fall in love with her. For some reason, she just has a natural animal magnetism to all of these characters. I just wanted to say, like, when he's talking to Mr. Bingley, like, it's obviously revealed that, like, they've already been chatting, and Mrs. Bennett's happy about that. He's like, welcome to the asylum. And then he's like, these are my daughters, or, like, this is my pack of goats or something. And then he's like, Elizabeth, the goatiest, is not here. This is Miss Price. Just like,
when
God.
He said that, because I thought of him as, like, you know, when people is like, Kanye is the goat.
Well, yeah, that would mean that Elizabeth is the goat, because
that's
the greatest.
The thing. I know, obviously, this was 2008. But yeah, so he calls Elizabeth the goatiest, which we can only assume means the greatest of all time. I still don't quite know what he was meaning by that, because I assume it's not what we think.
I think he's just being like, oh, they're just a silly, like, they're bleating and they're just frolicking around and being annoying, like goats. Yeah. Shitting all over the place. They ask Amanda why she's there, and she has to, like, make it up on the spot, and she's like, Lizzie's decided to write a book. And she can't write it here. She's too distracted. So she's gone to my house in Hammersmith and we've done, like, a swap. I mean, obviously, like, didn't tell anyone about this. So I just turned up at your house and that's, yeah, obviously, that's fine. I also was like, she's terrible at doing Regency speak considering she's such a massive Jane head. Jane head is the new term that I've coined for Jane Austen fans.
I hate it a little bit.
Jane head.
I mean, I think Jane Knights are the thing.
Yeah, that's a thing already, but I didn't make it up, so... Jane Head.
Just, you know, accept the community already exists.
Not my community. My people are the Jane Head.
But, yeah, also that's another thing, because I obviously would not be sure of myself to just speak in Regency type language. So again, you say...
I don't know, if everyone around me was, I think I would pick it up quite quickly.
You would 100% pick it up very quickly.
I would, and also, like...
And that is not up for debate. You are... About 10
seconds. I'd be in it. I would be there. I would be a Regency woman. In fact, I basically am a Regency woman. Like, all of this embroidery and shit that they're doing, I would be on it. If all you have to do is be able to... I've said this before, but if all you have to do is to be able to play the piano, read books and embroider and like, sound intelligent and accomplished, then, like, I would be a pro. But I also would have too many opinions, so that would be an issue. But the reason I know that I would pick it up immediately is because one time when I went to New Zealand, because I've got family in New Zealand, when I was 10, I picked up a New Zealand accent within a week. Like, I was just talking fluently like a New Zealander.
But apparently it's a sign of intelligence to adapt to your surroundings. So.
Well, clearly Amanda is a complete idiot.
Because, yeah, she just has this strong London accent the whole time.
She's just not even trying. It comes clear that, like, because Amanda's like, well, Bingley obviously is going to fancy Jane. And then it's clear that he actually fancies Amanda because he just keeps looking at her. And she's like, no, you have to like Jane. Jane wants to sort her hair out because she's got this weird, like, mushroom cut thing. Very blocky fringe. And she's like, I may be losing grip on reality, but I'm still in control of my hair. She goes to church, she bumps into Charlotte Lucas, and they'd mentioned, I think earlier someone had mentioned someone called Lady Ambrosia, and Charlotte's like, oh, so I've heard about Lizzie's book, I can't believe she didn't tell me. Who told you about it? Well, because I think she was like, oh, she told you though, didn't she? And she was like, oh, well, I didn't know about it at first, I heard about it from someone else. And she was like, well, who did you find out from? And she's like, Lady Ambrosia. And Charlotte Lucas is like, Lady Ambrosia is a corpulent female pig.
So, yeah, it's because when Lizzie first comes in and tells her the news about Netherfield being let, she's like, Amanda, you can't know because the only person I've told is Lady Ambrosia.
Ah.
So yeah, she's just picked a random name. And that's because I think Charlotte kind of doesn't trust her.
Yeah, she's like, who the fuck are you? I'm her best friend. You're coming in now. Like, literally just staying in her room, and she disappeared.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And then they're on the way to the assembly, and she brings out a lip gloss in front of everyone in the fucking carriage. She just brings out, like, a tube of juicy something. They're like, what is that? And she's like, last minute lippy for luck or something. And I'm like, dude, you're just not even trying.
And then they're at the Meryton Assembly Hall.
Yeah.
Bingley's trying to get Amanda to dance. But she's kind of panicking because obviously Bingley's supposed to be in love with Jane. And so she's like, oh, I can't dance with you. And he's like, why not? Because I've promised Mr. Darcy that I'll dance with him. Which is honestly, that is a risky move.
Like, why would, like, you know what he's like. Why would you pick that person?
If you know the story so well, I would not trust.
I would not be fucking with Mr. Darcy whatsoever.
Yeah, he might not back you up. Illness. Oh no.
Yeah, no way.
He does. But he's angry at her and he says the only reason. Because actually, what Bingley does is go, oh, so you dance with Mr. Darcy? Mr. Darcy doesn't dance. And he calls Mr. Darcy over and he's like, oh, are you dancing with Amanda? And he's like, oh, well, he says Miss Price.
And then he's like, yeah. And Bingley's like, wow, she must be really special if she's got you to dance. And he's like, yeah. And then they dance and he's like, what the fuck are you doing? And then I think she's like, well, he's supposed to dance with someone else, or I can't even remember what she says to him. But he's not happy.
Yeah, he's basically like, you try to embarrass my friend and that's the only reason.
Yeah, like that's the only reason that I agreed to it.
Yeah. She kind of gets told off by Darcy and she's freaking out at this point as well because I think she's kind of pissed off. She goes outside.
She's like, I really need a fag. I've got one fag. And she's got one in her boobs, just tucked. She's got so much stuff just tucked away in her tits. And there's just not that much of them. Like, I'm not being funny, but like, there's just not room in there. I could have a whole pocket of stuff in there. I choose not to because it would get sweaty and weird.
Gillian McKeith, when she went into the jungle, she put loads of little pockets on her underwear and her bra to bring spices in. So you can spice the food.
That would be me, actually. I would bring spices.
Yeah, she had like little bits of, like, she made little like pockets on her underwear. This is such a pop British pop culture reference. And she made,
sorry, Americans,
made,
you don't know what you're missing,
on her bra and her big pants. She brought in like paprika, salt and pepper and stuff like this, and they had like a whole system where she'd just like discreetly pull it out of her underwear and pass it to the cook.
Imagine reaching into your pants and pulling out.
Also, just imagine taking some spices off Gillian McKeith that you've know been in her knickers.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, so that's what
you've times are hard. Take the fanny paprika.
Do you know what? I think that's what you've missed the most if you're in the jungle.
The fanny paprika.
Yeah, just you just have plain rice and beans. What? Anyway, so she's pulled this cigarette and she decides that even though she's literally been there for what, overnight, so I think this is the end of the second day.
Yeah.
This is the time that she's going to use her one and only cigarette.
Yeah.
I feel like you'd hold on to that.
Yeah, and I mean, this is all just laying down the evidence for what I'm going to say is her star sign, because it's just ridiculous.
I'm excited for the star signs. I thought about that near the end because I was like, this is fucking nuts. None of the characters are like the actual characters.
I know, and I'm going to have time to formulate my theories slightly better because we're doing this over two parts, so...
Yeah, so she's smoking a cigarette. Bingley has come to find her like a pathetic little puppy.
Oh, I quite like Bingley in this one.
Yeah, I do like Bingley in this one, but he's kind of like, because he had that thing with his eyes when she showed him his boobs, and he's like,
boing!
And he's literally like following after her like a little lapdog, like a little teenage boy who someone's promised to, you know, show them their boobs. And they're just like, oh yeah, I'll do anything for more boobies. So he comes out.
Oh, fuck. I'll do anything for more boobies.
That's what the teens are like these days.
Oh my god.
They just want the boobies. Anyway, so little puppy old Bingley comes out.
Looking for boobies.
He said, boobies. She's like drunk at this point and she just had a cigarette. And then she, first of all, she does the spiel of where she's like, oh, I feel like I'm those people who discovered that Stone Age tribe and killed them all with the common cold.
And then, she's like, I know what happens and I'm upset with myself, you know, because I've just fucked it all up. And I'm like, well yeah.
You think she's fucked it up at this point? Dear Lord. Yeah.
And she's like, we're from different worlds and, you know, this is never going to happen. And then also she's like, then she kisses him.
She lunges at him, like properly... smackaroony.
Yeah, like, and they like make out and then he's like, whoa, what the fuck.
Yeah,
but also he loves it.
This is another thing because his face is like, oh.
He is like, I mean, this is gonna also like lay the foundations for Bingley's star sign because I've got theories. Yeah, he's very kind of like, he gets swept up in things.
Do you know what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna write down what I think they are so that when you say we can see how wrong or right it was. That'll be fun. Anyway, I have an idea for
I feel like you're learning about astrology from this and I'm enjoying that. Yeah, so then they like she goes off and Mr. Bingley's
goes back into the party and Mrs. Bennet spots her come in and then Mr. Bingley looking all pleased and ruffled with himself shortly afterwards. And this, I quite like this bit. Where so Mrs. Bennet goes over to Amanda and basically this like hysterical facade just drops.
Yeah, she's just savage. She's like, if you get in the way of my daughters, you will like go missing.
Basically, I think she threatens to kill her.
Yeah, she's just like, stay the fuck away. Do not interfere with my daughters' marriages.
And then Amanda's like, ooh, you're such a ball breaker.
Yeah. So then she goes home, they go back home, and there's a, because she's been trying all this time, she's been trying to communicate with Lizzie through the door and Lizzie's just not having it, she's just ignoring her. And then she comes home to this note that's been pushed through the door, which she gives to Mr. Bennet, and it says that he should trust Miss Price because she is their greatest ally. Ally?
Yeah, I was like, what?
I don't know why that is the one word that I always mispronounce. But anyway, yes, she is their greatest ally. And Mr. Bennet's like, fair enough. He just doesn't even question it. He's just like, fine.
Because she's the goatiest.
She's the goatiest.
She decides to try and get the story back on track.
Yes.
She is going to get Jane to travel to the Bingleys in bad weather. So she kind of pressures Jane into doing this, and then immediately after she leaves, I think she discovers that could be really bad and Jane could die.
Yeah, like apparently last time Jane went off and got wet in the rain, she nearly died. And so she's like, oh shit, because Jane's like, oh, you know, when I get wet, and she's like, yes, you're gonna get really wet. And then yeah, so then Jane goes off and then she realizes this and Amanda starts running after her in the rain, and you're just like, oh, of course she's gonna end up getting wet and staying there as well.
So that's the end of episode one.
Yeah.
Also, we'll take this moment because we're going to go to episode two. I just want to discuss the opening titles for a minute.
Yeah, very weird looking, like cutouts.
Yeah, cutouts, as if it's like, you know, those weird, I don't know if you used to get them, those cutout books and you could put the people in different places.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's what it looks like, and it's like her, the story of going from Hammersmith 2008 to Georgian Meriton, wherever it's set, I can't remember.
It's a very 2008 type style.
I got into it. I watched it every time.
Did you? I skipped it after the first
time. I knew you would. I literally, was, as I was watching this, I was like, Anna and her mum are not watching these titles.
We don't have time for that shit. My mum watched this with me, by the way, just for content. She was just like, what is happening?
So somehow Amanda manages to walk all the way to Netherfield Park in the rain.
I guess, like, and I don't know how she gets there, because, like, I'm guessing she's not, like, following right behind Jane, because then she would have stopped Jane.
Also, she does not get ill, yet Jane rode in the wet. She walked in the wet.
Well, because she's got a delicate constitution. She's a Regency lady. Ladies have developed much stronger constitutions in 2008.
Well, they do endure in this. They do endure. She arrives, and it's actually that scene, you know, where Lizzie goes to see Jane.
Except that I don't think Lizzie's, like, soaking wet. She's just sort of, like, got a wet hem or whatever. But no, in this, she's like, Amanda is soaked through and to the bone.
You zoom in on the hem of her dress, though.
Do they?
Covered in mud. Yeah, I think they're hamming it up a bit.
Yeah. She's like, get Jane into bed right now. She's going to be really ill.
Kind of ignores everyone. She comes storming in. She's like, she's really ill. Can somebody help me? And Caroline Bingley and Mr. Darcy are like, well, this is embarrassing, and just blank her.
Yeah.
Mr. Bingley has to help get Jane to bed.
Yeah. And then she brings out the paracetamol, which I guess she's also stored in her boobs.
Yeah, she pulls it out of her boobs. She does. Also, this was a risky move. Richard was watching with me at this point, and he was like, oh, I wouldn't do that. You don't know what's going to happen if you give them paracetamol.
Exactly. You just don't know. She might die.
No, you don't know if their bodies are ready for it.
My body is ready.
Is the body ready? Also, does paracetamol break a fever? Because I just thought...
It does, yeah. I believe. Not that I'm a doctor, but I believe it does.
Then Mr. Bingley. Because Mr. Darcy, I think, tries to get rid of Amanda.
And he's like, we'll send for a doctor. And Mr. Bingley's like, she's got paracetamol. She knows what she's doing.
And also because he still fancies her up until this point. So he wants her to stay. And then he keeps coming on to her and she just decides to pretend she's a lesbian.
Because he's like, oh, what happened between us the other night? I keep thinking about your lips, your tongue. And I'm like, ugh. I think she's like, I like the company of other women. And Mr. Bingley's like, is it really true that there are some women who steer the punt from the Cambridge end? But I don't know what that means.
I've never heard of that before.
No, but I guess it's just a weird, like, Regency way of, like, saying, oh, she's...
bats for the other side.
Yeah, she bats for the other team. I think it's like, you know when you, in rowing, there's always the cox person on the end?
Yeah.
Maybe it's a different end to the...
What I quite like about this is, so, like, Bingley finds this out and he's shocked, but also, like, not repulsed or anything.
No, he's just like, oh, okay then. And then she's like, but look at Jane. She's nice.
But it reminds me of, you know that bit where in Downton Abbey, Hugh Bonneville again, Thomas comes on to, like, someone's manipulated him into kissing another servant.
Yeah.
This servant isn't gay and it becomes, like, a big deal.
Is it James?
Yeah, I think so. Or, like, yeah, because he's called Jimmy, but they call him James.
Yeah.
And then they have to go talk to Lord Grantham about it. And he was like, oh, if I threw a tizzy every time someone kissed me at Eton. Like, they're just so casual.
If it happens at Eton, what happens at Eton stays at Eton, my friend.
And it just kind of reminded me of that, when, like, Bingley's like, I'd heard about it. But they're just kind of like, ooh. And then they just ignore it, basically.
Yeah, they don't really mind. And then so Mr. Bingley, like, stays with Jane. And then she's, like, goes and has dinner with... And it's basically just her and Mr. Darcy. And there's, like, a plant between them. So they can't even see each other. They're just sort of looking around this plant. and they give her some oysters, and she's like, I don't really like that.
Like tiny little dead birds.
Yeah, well, so Mr. Darcy's like, take, like, Miss Price doesn't care for shellfish. Bring her the next course. And then they bring her some larks, which are just like whole, like, they look like baby birds that have been baked in an oven, like whole.
Yeah, all they've done is be de-feathered, and you've just got the whole. Oh, it actually made me feel a bit sick.
Yeah, it was gross. And then, like, I think maybe Caroline comes in at some point, and she's like, oh, wow, you've really gotten, you know, you've really eaten all those oysters up, considering you're at the larks before Mr. Darcy or something. Which I wonder is if it's foreshadowing because of what Caroline sort of talks about later. But anyway. So they then are like, play piano for us. And she's like, I can't.
Caroline Bingley, basically at this point, it's very clear that, sorry, Amanda's taken Lizzie's place in the story. So Caroline Bingley doesn't like Amanda and embarrass her.
Yeah. So they ask her to play. She's like, I can't. And they're like, oh, we should send for another instrument. Is this instrument not good enough? And then Mr. Dice is like, no, she can't play piano at all. And I'm like, yikes. So, and then she's like, oh, and then Caroline's like, well, you can sing though, can't you? Everyone can sing. And she's like, okay, this is a song that my mum used to sing for me. And then she sings like,
introducing it. Downtown.
Downtown. When you're alone and life is making you lonely, you can always go downtown. I know that because it's in Lost. I've also been watching Lost with my family, and that for some reason is a song that plays often in Lost.
Yeah.
And then after she finishes, Mr. Bingley's like, whenever I am lonely, I shall always be sure to go downtown. And then Mr. Darcy, he's like, isn't that right, Darcy? And Darcy's like, with alacrity.
Because Darcy and Bingley enjoyed it, Caroline's a bit annoyed.
Mr. Bingley enjoyed it. I don't think Darcy did. I think he was just like, what the fuck happened?
And so Caroline's kind of like, you're never gonna get the riches you're looking for.
Like, I can see what you're trying to do. You're trying to trap Mr. Darcy. It's not gonna happen. And then she's like, well, I've got 27,000 a year, so I don't really need Mr. Darcy.
Which is like, obviously, I'm not after enormous him. By Regency standards.
Yeah, so Caroline's like, oh, what the fuck? And then Jane is better. She's like, she comes out of her sick room. And I think, can't remember who it was that was like, oh, Jane needs to go home now.
Well, Mr. Darcy is pushing for them both to leave. Because he doesn't want either of them there. So
Amanda goes like, because Mr. Bingley's like, oh, I don't really want her to go, but I'm not sure. Like, And Amanda just in her head is like, come on, Bingers. And it's like, yeah, she does the thing that we do where we start giving people nicknames.
Like, yeah, I did notice that. I was like, if this was me, I would be like, Bingers.
And then he lets them go, and she's like, that was pathetic.
So they get in the carriage, and the carriage breaks down.
They lose a wheel.
And I think, do they have to send for somebody?
No, so the another carriage drives past, and it's a bunch of soldiers, and with them is Wickham. So he saves them, and they all get into Wickham's carriage and drive off. So then they take them back to Longbourn, and then when they arrive...
Sorry, before we move on a little bit, because obviously Amanda knows what Wickham does in the
novel. Oh, yeah.
She kind of just talks to him like, shit.
She's just like, fuck off, Wickham. Hands off.
She's like, I know what you're doing, and I'm going to stop you.
I'm going to be right behind you with a neon sign telling everyone, do not trust this man. And he's like, what the fuck is neon?
Yeah, he's just like, okay.
He's a very chill guy.
I like his character.
Yeah, I mean, Wickham ends up being the MVP in this story, like the whole time. They go back to Longbourn, and when they arrive, Mr. Bennett's like, allow me to introduce Mr. Collins. And Amanda describes Mr. Collins as the king of the Mingers.
Lol, I'd forgotten that word. Oh, wow.
And she's like, oh, he's the king of the Mingers. He squeezes himself through his trousers and then he sniffs his fingers.
Oh.
Such, he's just like, he's a Bill. I mean, he's just classic Mr. Collins. He's a big creeper. But yeah, he's doing the thing that Mr. Collins does, where he's like, yeah, I'm here to marry one of your daughters, man. And then, I can't remember. Oh, yeah, I think he kisses Jane on the hand. Like, he's after Jane. He kisses her on the hand. And she's like, you kiss my glove. And he's like, I would kiss your every garment.
Oh, God, yeah. It's horrible. And, like, obviously, Amanda wants to stop this. So he starts a proposal to Jane. And Amanda just drags poor Charlotte Lucas along, being like, no, marry Charlotte Lucas instead. And Charlotte Lucas is like, well, this is incredibly embarrassing.
Yeah.
And like, oh God, I do feel for Charlotte.
She's like, basically like, oh, Jane can't give you what you need, but I've got a woman here who will love you in the way that you deserve or something. And then Charlotte runs off, and then he's like, oh, you're the woman. And he like tries to ask Amanda to marry him, and then she accepts.
Yeah, which is so weird. But apparently she accepts to save Jane.
Yeah, she's trying to prevent Jane from having to get married. And then she's like, obviously I'm not going to actually marry Mr. Collins, am I? And then they announce it, and there's just this like shot of, because he's really tall, and it's just her like weirdly kind of hunched in front of Mr. Collins while he holds her arm up really high. And then Darcy and Bingley come back to meet him. Why?
I think they've just come to see how Jane's getting on or something.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So they've come to visit for that, or maybe to see Amanda. I'm not sure.
And then Amanda's just like, Bingley, Jane, go on a walk.
But at the same time, then Wickham arrives while Darcy's there. Yeah. I think Bingley's also there. And Darcy's just basically literally just turns his back. It's quite a small room as well. And Darcy just turns his back on Wickham. And just like,
Mr. Bennet is like, what the fuck is going on? He's just like introducing everyone. And he's like, oh, okay.
Darcy's just like, I cannot see suddenly. I don't know.
You're like, I don't know. I can't see. Where is this Wickham you speak of?
La 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 la.
So Bingley and Jane go off. So I think actually Amanda's like, I need to go see some moles. Let's all go for a walk and look at moles.
First, Jane is really angry at her because she's interrupted the proposal by Mr. Collins, because she's like, I'm not going to get to marry Bingley. Like, this is a perfectly good proposal. What have you done? And she says something like, she's like, don't address me by my first name. I don't have very much power in this world, but like saying...
Yeah, no, she says I don't have many possessions.
Yeah, but my first name is one of them. And then she's like, Lady Ambrosia is a pig and I call her a pig or something, which I think is just like, call a spade. Or she's calling Amanda a pig.
Like that, because she's really annoyed with Amanda, and Amanda's like, it's not what you think. And she's like, she looks and smells like a pig, and she is a pig. And she's basically like, this is exactly what I think, because it looks and smells like what I think. And they just think Amanda is trying to bag a good proposal for herself.
Yeah, which is weird, because Collins is not a good proposal. Like, it's not that great. But anyway. And then Wickham comes up behind her, and he's like, that's an interesting choice you've made there, being engaged to Mr. Collins. If you ever have, you know, any kind of deficit that you need redressing, just give me a call. And she's like, I wouldn't have my deficit redressed by you if you were the last man on earth.
Lols.
This is when she sends Bingley and Jane to look for voles.
Yeah, because, well, they all go looking for voles, and then she's just like, you go look over there, I'll go look over here.
And then they come back round, and Bingley's like, oh, I'm going to hold a ball. Because I think she'd mentioned it earlier, and he was like, oh, I'm not sure. And then Jane's clearly encouraged him to do it. And so when they're on the way to the ball, that's when Lydia borrows her lip gloss.
Yeah, because obviously then when they're at the ball later on, Mrs. Bennet sees the lip gloss and is like, what?
You've made my daughter into a hussy. A shiny-lipped hussy.
I quite like Mrs. Bennet in this, because, yeah, she is a ball breaker.
She is. She doesn't hold back.
We're at the Netherfield Ball.
Then I've found Mr. Collins's first name. They're all announced, and he is announced as William Zeal of the Lord Collins.
Oh, yes, because she's like, whoa.
And he's like, my parents were very devout. And then Darcy warns Bingley off of Jane. He's like, you know, her family, everyone.
Oh, yeah, because first of all, they're dancing at the ball, and like things are going to plan because Bingley and Jane clearly love each other.
Yeah.
Or not love each other, but fancy each other.
Yeah.
And then Darcy kind of, I think, because, like, Amanda also keeps saying out loud, oh, things are going as they going to plan. Everything's going the way they should be.
Yeah.
And it obviously sounds really sneaky and weird.
Yeah.
So,
and Darcy's basically like, oh, you know, she's just, like, trying to trap you or whatever. I think, like, he just basically says what he says in the book, which is, like, yeah, her family are really embarrassing. Like, if you want to protect the honour of the family, like, if you marry her, then Charlotte will be kind of disgraced as well.
Well,
not Charlotte, Caroline.
Well, he's also just like, she's poor. She's poor.
Yeah, she's poor. And then because she's, like, rejected Mr. Wickham, and she's been really rude to Mr. Wickham, he starts spreading rumours to...
Oh, Amanda.
Yeah, about Amanda to Lydia, Mary and Kitty, about saying that Amanda's fortune of $27,000 a year is from fish, and that her father is a fishmonger. So yeah, that's really embarrassing for her, apparently.
Really ungentlemanly. Also, before we move on from the whole, like, Darcy says about how Jane, like, immediately after he kind of convinces Bingley out of Jane yeah, kind of comes up to him and is like, oh, you offered me the next two dances. And he's just like,
yeah, but I'm just gonna, I can't, sorry.
He basically just rejects her to her face.
Oh, yeah.
And she, like, runs out crying and, like, Caroline's kind of laughing.
Yeah. Caroline's a bitch in this one. She's not even...
Yeah.
Like, sometimes... Well, I mean, she gets a bit more complex, but, yeah.
Yeah. So then Wickham is Amanda, so he's spreading that fishmonger rumour. But also, I think he says something like, he's drank away a lot.
Oh, yeah, he's drank away most of it or something. And then because that's been spread around, Mr. Collins is like, I've heard that you are actually a fishmonger's daughter and I can't get married to you because fishy.
Fishy.
The Episcopal and the Piscatory cannot be united in matrimony.
And then she knees him in the balls.
Yep, and then Darcy's like, get the fuck out.
Yeah.
Also, and then she's like,
how?
Yeah, well, she goes, oh, I just need Colin and the balls and Darcy's kicking me out. This is so not going well. And it's like, yeah, we all just saw what happened. You don't need to, like, narrate everything
also,
that's happened.
Okay, like, this is the thing. She's just like, oh, no. But the thing is, so in this alternative universe, this has actually happened and these people are all real, yeah? You would still be humiliated about having to be kicked out of a party.
Yeah.
You're not going to be like, oh, this isn't going well as you walk out.
I think she was embarrassed, to be fair, but she just said it in a really weird way where she was just, like, literally narrating the...
That evening, we see Mrs. Bennet holding a crying Jane and kind of, like, comforting her and being like, you're going to do us so much help if you marry Mr. Collins.
Yeah, she's like, someone's going to see that lovely neck, that lovely long neck that you have, and they're going to be like, yes, Jane's the woman for me. And then the next day, Jane gets engaged to Mr. Collins.
Yeah, and then they get married pretty much immediately.
And Charlotte says that she's going to Africa to be a missionary.
Yeah, because she's got no prospects because she's 27 and old.
And Mr. Collins is now gone.
Yeah, well, he's literally got married to Jane, and you just see Mr. Bingley watching tearfully.
Yeah, just like, no.
And also, like, at this point, because I think this is the point where you're like, what the fuck is happening? Because
yeah.
Jane is literally married to Mr. Collins at this point.
Yeah.
And you're just like, what? Mr. Bingley's crying. It's like, reminds me of that thing where you're like, the kids are crying now. He's crying. Charlotte Lucas is like, I've got no prospects. I'm gonna go and be
totally fucked everything up.
And she's just still a bit like, oh, balls this up. And I'm like, you have ruined these people's lives. Like, ruined them.
And then Mrs. Bennet goes to her, she's like, you need to leave Longbourn. I've had enough of you. You've done enough. Which frankly, she has. And then Wickham says to her, we have the same scent. I can smell myself on you. Because it's basically like we're similar people. And we're like, but did you have to say the scent thing? Could you just maybe have said we're similar? I think she says to Bingley right before she leaves, she's like, badly done, Bingley, badly done.
Yeah, I noticed that reference.
Yeah, cool. So I knew you would.
She literally goes over to Bingley, she kind of just rips into him.
She rips him a new one. She's just like, you fucking idiot. Why didn't you just ignore Darcy and propose to Jane?
First of all, she doesn't even mention Darcy. She's just like, why? Like, yes, she's poor, but like, you don't actually care about it. And she just literally, she does lay into him, which kind of deserves a little bit.
Yeah, maybe. I just feel like, I mean, she didn't have very much time to think about it after, because Jane pretty much immediately got engaged to Mr. Collins. So
yeah, that was like, another thing. I was like, also Mrs. Bennet is also to blame here.
Yeah, I mean, there's many. I mean, Jane also had a choice about it, but she was just like, yeah, no, I'll just marry Mr. Collins. I guess this is over then.
Yeah, it's all so chaotic. And he's just like crying and he was like, I'm sorry, I'm weak and Darcy's stronger. And she's like, Darcy.
So then she goes to rant at Darcy and he's like, you repel me. He just is like, you are just like, basically everything that you do is just disgusting to me.
He's literally like, you're just this scummy.
Like, you're just so uncouth and you're just coming in here and fucking around and just like not giving a shit. And yeah, you're the worst.
She just keeps, because the thing is, she knows who Mr. Darcy is. Mr. Darcy doesn't know who she is. And she keeps kind of talking to him as if
he knows what the whole character arc is going to be. Because she's like, you're not, why are you being such a dick? You're not supposed to be that much of a dick. Like, why are you being like this? It's like, he literally is just, he doesn't know. He's not been there yet.
Yeah, he hasn't gone through his development yet. He's at the beginning. And he's just like, so obviously he's like, who the fuck are you?
Like, if you were, just imagine if you were like, I don't know, just time travelling in some way. And you just started telling everyone every fucking thing that happens in their lives. Like,
and then telling them off when they don't do it exactly.
And then, yeah, and then just imagine if, like, your future self came and was like, well, you're not doing this very well. And it's like, sorry, well, this is who I am.
And literally, he's literally like, you disgust me, get away from me. And then she says that weird thing where she's like, I'm not going to dream about him tonight.
I'm not going to.
And then she's like, I am going to, but I hope he chokes.
Yeah, and that's the end of episode 2.
Also, just before we end up, we do see Mr. Bennet be super mad about the Jane and Colin.
Jane getting married. He's sleeping on the, not sofa, it's like a chaise longue.
Yeah, in the library.
In his library, because he's got his library. He just stays in there most of the time because he just hates his family, clearly.
He's just like, you've ruined Jane's life.
Yeah, and she's like, come back to sleep in the bedroom, Mr. Collins. And he's like, no.
Nope. Not for me.
That's
the end of episode 2. Also, if you want to watch, so if you want to keep up, we watched it in BritBox. So it is available in BritBox if you want to watch it like that. So because it'll be interesting if they listen to this episode, watch the first 2. I hope people watch some of the things we talk about because we've talked about them.
Yeah, me too. If you have an opinion on any of the things that we've talked about, you can go to Anchor, I believe, and send us a little voice note. Maybe we'll play it.
Yeah, we might be able to play it.
Also, unless you're horrible.
Yeah, oh yeah. Did you say something really bad? No.
We definitely won't. But like, we'll consider it.
We will strongly consider playing it. Also, if you want to just...
Or you can write us an email if you don't like having your voice on air, whatever.
Yeah, you can get in touch via our Instagram.
Or our email, austintranslation@gmail.com. austintranslationpod.
Yeah, and Instagram is austin_translation_pod. All of the details are always in the bottom anyway. So have a look down underneath this episode. Tune in next week to find...
Will Mr. Collins die? That would be one that I would read. That would be a fan fiction I would be interested in.
Will Mrs. Bennet really murder Amanda Price? Find out all of this and more. Does Mr. Bennet ever leave the library? Oh god, it would be good. So yeah, we're gonna end this recording now.
Yeah, it's been...
we have rambled.
Yeah,
but we'll be back next week to finish this shite. 's all from us for now. We'll be back next week discussing the second half of the Lost in Austin 2008 miniseries. Please review us 5 stars if your app allows, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. If you want to get in touch, please email us at austintranslationpod@gmail.com or austin_translation_pod on Instagram. We bid you adieu.
Downtown.
Dinner.